We saw how Lord has diagnosed the problem of Arjuna, that there is the terrible confusion and the state of indecision, what to do, what not to do, and a very painful situation and therefore had ensued in his life, which happens to all of us one time or the other. And the reason for that was Arjuna's attachment for I and the world. The attachment creates these situations for us. The word attachment is not always very well understood in the Western context. I had encountered situations where people objected to this word, saying that what does it mean? So you will not be concerned with anything in the world. One lady asked, suppose you are I am walking and you are around, if I fall, will you not come and help me to get up? I said, no, non-attachment doesn't mean that kind of indifference. It does not mean either lack of love. In fact, one can love much better if one is detached. Detachment means not claiming anything and not getting involved in anything. You do your duties, like it is certainly an ordinary person's duty, wherever it is seen that something is necessary to be done, we should do it. That is certainly our duty, and it should be done. But with that, if I am attached, come expectations that that person also should do like that to me or more. Well, I did that, but that person did not even say thanks. What is this? And that becomes a bondage. So do your work, don't expect anything. Not to expect anything from the world is the meaning of detachment. So, nothing is I or mine, you know, that nothing is mine, that sense is to be practiced. Now, why does this attachment come at all? That also is very beautifully diagnosed by Lord. This attachment is a result of our misperception. When I see that this world is real, that this person is real here, that Teddy is real sitting there, then when you see those things to be real, then you get tied with them, with different bonds of, say, love or hatred. Because you see those things to be real, and so you feel that yes, this I as such is real, that person there is as such real, the food that I see is as such real, all these pleasant as well as unpleasant objects are real, and thus you go for them, and then you get caught in them. So, this misperception is the cause for attachment, that attachment is the cause for suffering. Now, therefore Lord explained that you have to see the things in proper perspective. See the unchanging reality on which these changing forms appear and disappear. Concentrate on that unchanging reality. And then, understood very well, but it doesn't function in life that easily. Yes, I understood that all those objects are not real, but still somehow I get attracted or repelled. Still I have the spell of all that. Just by reading about it, it doesn't go away. What is the way out? Is it all just theoretical? Like the understanding of the scientist, you know. The physical scientist, what is, when they intellectually understand something, that's good enough. That is, whether I actually perceive it like that or not doesn't matter to them. Like they all know that all of us are composed of the same particles, same electron, protons and all that. But do they actually see everything as same? Do their actions actually are prompted by that? Had it been the case, we wouldn't have seen so much of personal jealousies and ambitions and the desires for money and name and fame amongst them. Why do we see those things? Why do they that happens? That understanding remains in the head, doesn't percolate in the heart and never comes in the action. This is the difference between the spiritual understanding that you not only are required to understand it intellectually. Intellectual understanding is good, intellectual understanding is required, but that is just the first step. It is just the beginning. Then it has to come into your life as your actual experience. And so, the science of experience, how to experience this truth, has been presented to Arjuna in the form of what is called yoga. That Arjuna practiced this yoga. So again and again, I refer to that beautiful colophon at the end of the each chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where it says that Bhagavad Gita is Brahma Vidya, that is the intellectual understanding, and Yoga Shastra, means the way by which what is intellectually understood gets transformed into our day-to-day life. It becomes functional. So, that is called yoga. And Arjuna is therefore told by Lord to practice this yoga, which means in essence to change the mode of your life, do works. The same works are to be done, but with a different attitude. Learn while working to practice the spirit of detachment. Learn to practice not I or mine, but Lord, Thou and Thou alone. There we had seen this, how the action is to be done as sacrifice. Last three chapters, part of second chapter, third chapter, fourth chapter, and now in the fifth chapter we are discussing the various aspects of this yoga, the way a yogi does the actions. And we saw last time in the 12th verse of this that there is this difference between the two people working. Not that the yogi writes, other person is writing with right hand, the yogi learns to write with left hand, or vice versa. Not that, it is the same writing. Not that other people walk on two legs, the yogi decides to walk on one leg. That doesn't make anybody yogi. The same actions are done. Externally speaking, you don't change your actions at all. The one who is, say, an engineer remains an engineer. Somebody who is teaching and keeps on doing that very job. Somebody is a janitor, keeps on doing that very job. Not that your jobs change, but the mode of their doing becomes changes completely. You learn gradually to do them in the spirit of detachment, learning not to expect. And it is therefore said that you do your activities and then offer the results to God. You act after act this your actions, then you say that these yogis, they perform the work as it has been told in the 11th verse, that they do work for purification. That becomes the purpose of all actions, not for any other thing. Those things will come as byproduct. Not that you will not get money for the work that you are doing. It is said that do work for self-purification, Atma Shuddhaye. Do works for self-purification. Then somebody will ask, then, well, what about getting money? I have to earn money for that. I work so hard in that factory. And you mean that it is, I will be only having the self-purification and no money. How can I feed myself? How can I sustain myself? Friends, it is not that idea at all. You will get all your money or whatever according to what those actions they are supposed to give you. But that should not be your main focus. What should be your main focus? That byproduct will be there. But the most important thing is, don't expect that. Because it doesn't depend, what you get does not depend on your expectations. Even if Olu thinks that I will get 1 million every month, what does it cost to expect? By expectation he doesn't get, whatever is he is supposed to get by doing that work, that much will be he will be getting. It doesn't depend on how much you expect. Otherwise, nobody will be beggar, you know, nobody will be a poor fellow, because everybody can expect whatever. So, it doesn't depend, what you get doesn't depend on your expectations. What happens when you expect? Only bondage ensues. So, do we want bondage? Do we want suffering? No, answer is obvious, is it not? I don't want suffering, I don't want bondage. Don't expect. Simple thing, you do not lose anything by not expecting. Absolutely not. By not expecting, you attain so much of freedom. Whatever you are to get, you will get anyway. It has nothing to do with what you expect. And if you concentrate on self-purification, that to feel that God is the reality, the passing names and forms is not the truth. And thus that work will become then a big purifying force in your life. It is the real purpose of work for a yogi is that. So that is how yogis do work. Otherwise you get bound, as it is said in the 12th verse. Then we saw last time that a yogi tries to feel that one's own true nature never changes. Is a permanent thing in the changing body, mind and all that. Imagine it to be the town that you are staying. Many such analogies are given. Sometimes it is told as a house that you are staying in, or a town that you are staying in, or a car or a cart that you are staying in. So, in these different ways it is described that you are the unchanging entity. That which changes is the surroundings. It goes on changing. Like the body goes on changing, the very baby became an old man. And now all these changes took place in the body. The person knew that the same I was, he will say, I was a baby then, and I, the same I, the same fellow is experiencing all these stages, like the pictures. So, that unchanging entity, focus on that. So, it is the 13th verse. Sarva karmani manasa sanyasyaste sukham vashi navadvare pure dehi naiva kurvan nakarayan. The self-controlled embodied being renouncing all actions through his mind rest at ease in the city of nine gates, neither acting nor causing to act. It is our these different organs, sense organs and motor organs, these are kind of holes or the gates. They are really gates, but since we have forgotten how to use them as gates, and they have remained just as holes, you know. So everything, anything that we don't want just finds an entry. Something that we want to enter, at that time the hole might be closed, the door might be closed. We do not know how to control it. So, these nine gates are there. And in the this city with nine gates, this being is untouched state. And naiva kurvan na karayan, does not do anything and does not make anything happen either. When I say I am giving lectures, I am giving this talk, it is not really my true nature. It is not the I that is the consciousness. It is just there. It is not really. The lips are moving, behind that these vocal cords are moving, the blood is circulating in the body, the mind is generating many thoughts. These thoughts, it is very much like the computer, you know, that you have some software, say a song, and then there is the sound card that transforms it, then there are the speakers, then it comes out. So there is a processing unit, and that combines the various thoughts. Then these thoughts are converted into the sound. That sound then is connected with these vocal cords, and with these movements it is coming out. When it goes to you, it is the reverse process, that your eardrums, they get, feels the vibration, that is converted into electric signals carried into the brain by the nerves. Then that gets transformed into the proper language and meaning, and then that is understood by the mind. You are not involved at all. In this whole process, my telling, your hearing, or whatever other actions that we are doing, it is, the self is not involved at all. A great principle, very difficult to understand, very confusing, but very important, that I am not involved, really speaking, in anything. I am not working at all. It is the body and the mind that is doing the work. It is a great idea, and one has to pay lot of attention, do lot of proper thinking and meditation to get this at this at the root of this, that I am completely untouched by any of these changes. I do not work at all. It is the clouds that move, and then it appears sometimes that if our attention is on the cloud, we feel that the sun is moving, not the cloud, and feel that, wow, the sun came that distance moving. Sometimes the cloud is moving fast, it appears sun is moving fast. It is, sun is not, relatively speaking, moving there. It is the movement of cloud that makes you feel that the sun is moving. It is similarly, we see that the sky is blue, or the sky is red, or the sky is... The sky doesn't have any color as such there. It is the different clouds, the different combinations of dust, and that you feel that color there. And we superimpose it on the sky. So similarly, I am not involved in anything. The colors of body and mind, they get superimposed on me. And because of that superimposition, now the world becomes different, friends. I am born on such and such date. I am... as 50 years or 60 years or 20 years old, I am a man or a woman, I have this job, these are my parents, these are my duties, these are my social responsibilities. All this becomes a reality because of identification. You identify with something, and that becomes your reality there. You are seeing a dream, and in dream you identify or with a dream object there. You see in the dream that, well, that is a nice flower, and let me get that flower. In the dream, you are moving to get that flower. You pick that flower and you are about to bring it to your nose to take the fragrance, and you wake up. Now what happened? Where is the flower? It was all the identification with the waves of the mind. You were not that, your mind had become flower. Your mind had become the dream body that was going there. Your mind had become the hand that was, and the nose and all that. So similarly, now also our mind takes various shapes, and it gets superimposed, this picture gets superimposed on I. That has no role actually to play in any of these. But because of that, you feel that I am doing this. I am walking. You are not walking. You say, I am sitting in this lecture hall in the Vedanta chapel. Are you sitting? Think, you know. Your body may be sitting here. Mind, we do not know where it suddenly slips away. can go to see a football game or can start worrying about what is my son doing right now. It is the... So where are you? You really never came, never went. In Ishavasya Upanishad, it is therefore said how this confusion takes place. Beautiful words, no? Tadejati, tannayjati, taddure, tadvantike, tadantarasya sarvasya, tadu sarvasyasya bahyataha. It says, it appears to vibrate, move, and it really doesn't move at all. It appears to be close, it appears to be far. Because these distances, close and far, all those are superimposed on the self. The farthest object is also the self. The nearest object is also really the unchanging self. All is happening on that. These are the superimpositions that we put on that and identify ourselves. I am so and so. And that is why self-knowledge is the most difficult thing and the most necessary thing. Who is closer to us, than our true self? Nearest. I am nearest to me. And yet so difficult to grasp. I am so near to me that my organs like eyes, ears and the mind, they are really outside. And therefore cannot see me, cannot know me. I am their source too. It is therefore one has to pause a bit and give it a very hard thought. Who am I? I am not this body or mind. They are doing the work. They are doing the actions. They move here and there. I do not change at all. So, this is an analogy given beautifully that think of this body and the mind too. It is together presented here as body. That you are the dweller in it. You don't do anything. You do not act. Now, whatever changes take place are in the body, in the mind, in essentially in matter. Nothing happens to you. So, naiva kurvan na karayan. You do not do anything, nor you instruct anybody to do something. Neither you make anything happen, nor you participate in any happening. You are detached, untouched. Like the screen in the movie. Everything is seen on it. Does it participate in anything? Not really. A lot of violence can be seen in the movie. Nothing happens there. The screen doesn't participate in any of that. Remains just detached. And yet, that screen, because of superimposition, it is being seen as that man or that woman or that particular scene, all those movements happening there on this screen, which is just detached. Nothing is happening on that. No changes are happening there. Is the screen doing anything there? Not doing anything. Not making anything happen, and yet it is screen that is being seen as a man or a woman or whatever picture we see. So, Bhagavad Gita tells therefore that remember you get identified with all these and then therefore get bound. Therefore you feel, I am doing this and this and this. And that happens the bondage. And then you find a God to put all blame on. No? So next verse is about it. That, oh, why God did like that to me? Well, God didn't do anything to you. You did. You got identified with these things. Through identification, you got caught into bondage. So many desires you identified with, and thus created a mess for you. And now you say, that blame God for that. It is not the case. Na kartritvam na karmani lokasya srijati prabhu na karma phala sanyogam svabhavastu pravartate. The Lord creates for this world neither agency nor actions nor the union with the fruit of actions, but nature acts. And this is the what is called prakriti or nature or swabhava. This is a technical word used mostly by Sankhyas, but Vedanta also uses this word to show that it is because of the identification things are happening, which you feel that you are doing or somebody else is doing. Don't blame anybody. Because of your identification, you have got yourself into this terrible problem, and therefore take the responsibility on yourself. Don't put the blame on somebody else, that, oh God, why did you put me in this? It is very easy, then, you know, feels that I am not responsible, that God, everything is decided by God ultimately. God is the controller. Why did God not bring good thoughts in my mind then? It is, God has no role at all in this. Take the responsibility on your own shoulders. In Jnana Yoga, Swami Vivekananda mentions this, that Vedanta exhorts you to take up the responsibility. It is, and it is good, because you have got into problem by doing such things, you can extricate yourself to. Just I was hearing Adishwarananji's lecture, a nice joke came there. About this, there was a man, his wife and his mother-in-law, wife's mother, and they were going for a hunting expedition in a deep forest. There were a lot of wild animals and all there. And at one place, they stopped their that jeep. And they were dozing a little bit. After a while, the wife exclaimed, "Oh, I don't see my mother. Where is she gone?" I said, "Oh, my mother-in-law is not there. Oh, Randy, we should do something to find her." Okay. He took up his gun, had a shot of whiskey, and well, to go out to find mother-in-law, not an easy job, you see. And then he and his wife got out, and as they started looking for her, in an opening, they saw that terrible sight. There was his mother-in-law, and there was this lion right in front of her. And now, what to do? This girl said, "Oh, Randy, do something. And he started going back saying, the lion himself has got himself into trouble, and let him come out of it. Let him get out of this trouble himself. So it is. So Vedanta says that you have got yourself into this mess, and so you can extricate yourself through this mess by properly arranging your actions. Don't blame anybody. Don't say that God put me into these conditions, and why God brought all this problem in my life. So next verse also tells that the same idea. Na datte kastichit papam na chaiva sukritam vibhu ajnane navritam jnanam tena muhyanti jantavah. The omnipresent Lord does not accept sin or virtue of anybody. Knowledge is enveloped by ignorance. Because of this, beings get deluded. All is because of ignorance. You are really free. But you think that, no, I am this bound like this, and that God, some God will come and then open my bondage. But why is he not doing it now? And he should put me in a better situation. If he wants to keep me in bondage, at least he should give me more money. And like that, not it is. Nobody's sin is taken by the Lord, nor anybody's good actions either. You do and you suffer, or you become better, whatever. You get according to your karma. No blame for God or anybody here. Very difficult, friends, to accept the truth. We always want somebody, let me go to a church and confess, and so some Lord then takes away my sins, and then I am free. I am free of those sins and can do more. It is not that some Lord is going to take it on himself. What a great it is fooling people that some Lord has taken up all your sins. It is making people just get misled. Nobody is taking it. It is you are the responsible for it. As Swami Vivekananda says, that thine is the rope that holds, thine is the hand that holds the rope that drags thee on. Don't blame anybody. The first thing that we have to learn is stop blaming God or blaming situation or blaming anybody else, and no use blaming mother-in-law at all. It is you who have to take up these challenges yourself and act in the right direction. The means is with you, that practice yoga. And so we have to bring up this knowledge forth. Next verse is about that. Jnanena tu tadajnanam yesham nashitam atmanah tesham adityavajnanam prakashayati tatparam. But those whose ignorance has been destroyed by the knowledge of the self, their knowledge, like the sun, manifests that highest being. That highest being thus gets manifested by the destruction of the ignorance. this ignorance is destroyed by knowledge. As is the cause, so should be the remedy. The cause of all these problems is ignorance, and so the remedy is knowledge. So, we have to put in all the attention or efforts in acquisition or imbibing of this knowledge, that's all. There is no other way of salvation. There is no other method either. There is the ignorance and knowledge. Knowledge comes, ignorance goes away. There is no, absolutely no other way. Many times people say, why should we not save the world? And why saints do not put in efforts to save the world? It is, well, the world cannot be saved because it doesn't exist really. The things, can you save a man from dying? You may postpone the death, but then the death is something that is certain. That which is not really there has to go away. And that is how you know that it is not real. You cannot keep the names and forms permanently there. The things keep on changing and then they vanish. So, you cannot save in that sense anyone. It is an ignorance to think that we can do that. We can make efforts, but whatever efforts we put in, let us remember their true merit lies in how much we do it without expectation and how much they help us to remove this ignorance. It is something like that. One Swami gave this beautiful analogy and I like that. So I also use that a lot. That suppose our Tom is sleeping nicely, not in the class, I mean. In the bed he is sleeping nicely and seeing a dream. I am sitting by his side. And in sleep he is seeing a dream that a robber is chasing him with gun, and he is running and that fellow is chasing. And that fear and all is uttering in his sleep those fearful these cries and all, and running. Now, what is my job there? To go and get a gun to kill the robber or call 911? Wake him up. So when the knowledge dawns up, and there is no robber there. I don't have to save him from from the hands of the robber. I cannot do that. There is no robber. What can be saved, friends? That which is real, that alone can be saved. That which is unreal, what are you going to save there? So, the real saving effort is to see the truth. There is nothing else you can do and should do about that. All the other works that you do out of compassion, you should do that. It is much better than to do the cruel acts. But their purpose is to purify yourself. Not that so there is no use of doing good work and so let me do bad works as if doing bad works has use. It is doing good works is useful if in that sense of purification, in the sense of yoga. So therefore it is said that this highest being is seen, Adityavad, like the sun shining, that knowledge shines and the truth is revealed there. Otherwise, there are all those reactions in life. You are seeing a terrible snake there, big, and you are worried that it is going to bite and then I will be dead. And how to kill that snake? The palpitations are going fast, you know, that, oh, what should I do? Should I bring a stick to kill it? But then by the time I go to bring the stick, it may hide somewhere and then later on bite me. And where to find the stick? You are shivering with fear. In fact, you might have started thinking that now I am already, a snake has bitten me and maybe I am dying. What should be, let me write my, that, what is that last letter? Will. Let me write down my will. Don't give a penny to that and so forth. So, it is, and then suddenly somebody switches on the light there and you see it was a rope that appeared like snake. Now what is, what now do you do? Has the snake been killed there by somebody? It wasn't there to be seen. It is the rope that existed. So, exactly in the same way, and the snake vanished. What happens to the world then? Many people ask this question, that if you see God everywhere, when the knowledge comes and you suddenly see Brahman, the one reality pervading everything, you see it, then what happens to the world? What happens to the world? We start worrying. Jamuna Bai will start worrying, what will happen then? Suppose I suddenly realize God, and now at this moment, then my experiments, what will happen to them? My all those biology lab experiments that I am doing, what will happen to all those experiments? What will happen to those results? Well, what happens to the snake? When you see that it is rope, it goes and finds a hole to hide in. It is like that, friends. In those beautiful dialogues with Raman Maharshi, or also with that Nisargadatta Maharaj, you read these very nice, many ask these questions, that how this problem, I feel depressed many times, how to get rid of this depression? And the answer, the question is very long, but the answer is begins at least with a very short phrase. Think, who is getting depressed? And that removes the depression. Who is getting depressed? Is the body getting depressed? Is the mind getting depressed? Who is getting depressed? It is, think of that who, and the problem will be solved. So, when this knowledge shines forth, then nothing more remains to be achieved there. This is, therefore, has to be the focus in our life. All these actions are to be done, but know that the reality is this. All works we have to do. This is not to dissuade you from doing work. We all have to do work. In fact, Lord again and again emphasizes this. After telling this, there will be again an emphasis on actions too. But that action has to be done with this background awareness. Then these actions will move in the right directions. That, what is to be achieved here? Nothing much. There will be so much of equanimity There will be lot of side benefits of this just knowledge entering in our life just a little bit. Your decisions will start becoming more balanced because you are seeing the picture more completely now. Also, you will have not that these terrible attractions and repulsions about the things in the world, because somehow that knowledge will start telling you, well, this is not fully real. Although you are seeing it real, it is not real. So it will help for detachment. I have seen many, many people, friends, not only monks, but householders, many of them just ordinarily, not that they were readers of many nice books and all that, they were doing their work, and in a detached manner they slowly learned this, how the life gets transformed by learning to work in this fashion. It was a very great lesson in life, that slowly that knowledge starts making presence in life. Their actions then become different. Their priorities in life become different. And a peace seems to dwell in their life. In most difficult situations, in great calamities in life, I have seen these people, most ordinary looking, they didn't have a big fame as a teacher of Vedanta, but they imbibed the principles of Vedanta. And it was wonderful to see how with great equanimity they faced those situations. So it is very important to see that what happens in such lives, that the sun shines there, sun of knowledge, and all actions pertaining to ignorance, they vanish. And now he tells that, so you have to train your life in that way. It is a matter of training. So next verse is about that. We don't have the time to discuss it right now. Next Friday we shall try to discuss it. It is about directing our mind, our faculty of action, our faculty of thinking. Everything is now to be turned, you know, turned in this proper direction, in the direction of that knowledge, that reality. Any questions? Yes, Charles?
Two questions,
okay.
You said to offer the fruits of your work to God, but what if you're not successful in the work? How can you offer that to God? That's my first question.
Oh, okay. First, the answer to the first question is offer failure also to God.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever result you get, it is not said that offer success to God. If you fail, that also offer to God. Success or failures, both are to be offered to God. The results of actions, whether you got what you... success means what you got, what you intended to get by that action. Failure means you got some result that you did not aim for. But both are results. So offer the results to the God. That is what is to be done, not just success. And
the other question, I got a book on sale at a used bookstore by a Swami named Nityananda.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I just started, it's a really thick book about this big, and he says, drop the mind, and I just started this book. But you said tonight that knowledge is important too. I don't exactly understand why he said drop the mind and then goes on to have a big thick book that you're supposed to be thinking about. But if the mind is the problem, how can knowledge help you?
Oh, see, the that also is to be inculcated in the mind. Dropping the mind means just as you disidentify yourself from the body, you disidentify yourself from the mind too. So that is called dropping the mind. Exactly. I don't know exactly what context that the word has been used by that Swamiji, but must be something like that. So dropping means that just as you are not the body.
Well, what he's saying in the book is just listen to what I'm saying and don't think about it. Just listen to it.
Well, that is, so that will get into you. That is what he means, probably. Again, it is my interpretation, you know. It is, I am not having the book right now to see exactly what contexts are there. Right. Yes, Terry?
And that looks good when I think about doing that. Then, this past week, things the body was doing was causing me the effect. And that's when I realized that I had attachment to the outcome. So that's when I went back and just observed the body and what it was doing. And amazingly, it didn't bother me anymore. It was just an observation and I got through it.
Right, it is very correct, you know. That is how it happens, what she said. It is not a question, but her observation that she decided that let me just observe, that I am not doing, the body is doing. So, as long as we remember this, it is all goes very fine. This memory slips and then you identify. As soon as you identify, you get caught, you get troubled. So, therefore, through practice, this memory will become strong. One of the Upanishads mention it like that. Even many in the Buddhist teachings, therefore, give a lot of stress on strengthening the right memory. And they call it Smriti Skandha. One of the major planks of the Buddhist practice is strengthening this right memory. In Chandogya Upanishads, it is mentioned that by having proper intake, your mind is purified. When the mind is purified, the memory becomes strong. And with that strong memory, you can cut asunder all bondages. It is just three simple steps, you know. So, take proper intake. So, having proper intake means not just by this mouth, by eyes, ears. Only take what is proper. And that will purify the mind because all these go inside the mind. You see something that titillates the mind and then its reactions start going in the body, in the life and all that. So, it is important to keep, have pure intake. Pure intake, then that will purify the mind. When the mind is pure, then that memory, I am divine, and that will come forth. Otherwise, it is all covered, you know. Like what you have in your home, but you don't see where it is. You want it badly. You try to remember where did I put it. You keep on thinking, I did like that, I went to bathroom, did I drop it there, or I was working in the kitchen when the phone rang, I might have put it there. You try to just remove the coverings, and it suddenly, you see it, oh, it is right there, what a fool I had been. So, It is like that the memory springs up. I am divine. Now hold on to it. Don't let it get covered by anything else. I am the all-pervading self. I am not this body. I am not this mind. I am everywhere. I am eternal. I am immortal. Hold on to this memory and all bondages will be cut asunder. That is, I